Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
And welcome back to the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. Sean Penrod here. This is episode 270, and we have a Grand Prix champion on the show today, ready to share his tips, his tricks, his journey with you. But before we dive into the great interview, I want to say thank you so much to Paragon City Games for supporting the show. They are the proud sponsors who provide the prize support, not only for the monthly giveaway that we do for the patrons, but also for the league that we do once every set. And I'm happy to announce that the Rivals of Ixalan League is about to start. So go to mtgpro2.com/sealed league. You'll be redirected to the Facebook group that we set up specifically for the Sealed League. So check that out. I also want to say thank you so much to the patrons for supporting the show. This month has been different. I switched over how the Patreon was set up. And to be completely honest, the chances of winning right now are really, really good because the prizes only go to people who are at the Bed of Plants level or higher. That's $5 or higher per month. We're doing per month pledges as opposed to per episode. And right now, the pool of people who are $5 a month or higher is very small. So you have a very high chance of winning if you choose to pledge $5 or more per month. So mtgpro2.com/Patreon is where you can go to check that out. You can update your pledge if you are already a patron, or you can sign up and become a brand new patron. Either one works just fine. That said, I know that I was holding off on announcing the December winner because I wanted to let all the patrons have a chance to update their account. And hey, I think a month is long enough, so I'm happy to announce that Jason Myers, congratulations, you are the winner of the Rivals of Ixalan bundle that we're giving away for the month of December. I know that it is about a month late, but like I said, I wanted to give everybody a chance to update their accounts, and you were one of them. Thank you so much, Jason. And when I did my random number generator thing, your name came up. So congrats, man. We'll be sending that off your way here shortly. And probably next week or the week after, we will be announcing the winner for the January giveaway. And again, the pool is really small. So you have from now until the drawing to sign up at the Bed of Plants level that is $5 or greater, and you will be considered for every drawing we do moving forward. So Jason Myers, thank you so much for being a supporter of the show. All you other patrons, thank you so much. Your support really does mean a lot to me and to the show. It keeps it going. And Paragon City Games, thank you again for your support and for providing the prizes for these giveaways. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Let's see. Last week, we had GP Houston and GP London. Those were really fun. And this weekend, there aren't really any GPs going on. So it's a chance for you to get out there and play some Magic. And I hope you're able to do that and work that into your schedule and connect with friends and just have a good time. So like I mentioned at the top, we have a great guest coming on right now, a Grand Prix champion. So let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest has been playing competitive Magic for 8 years. In that time, he has made 2 Grand Prix top fours with 1 win and 1 SCG Open top 8. He has found himself to always need a competitive outlet, and Magic has always been first and foremost for him. Coming to us from Austin, Texas, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Jeremy Fry. Jeremy, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. Howdy, fellas.
Are you ready to delve into your mind and share tips and tricks to take our audience to the next level?
For sure. Go on.
Excellent. Now, Jeremy, we love to dive into a little bit of stuff outside Magic first. So are you born and raised in Austin? Is that where you're from, or are you transplant?
I'm originally from College Station, Texas.
Okay, cool. Very cool. So what did you do in Austin?
I went to Texas A&M, which is also in College Station. And when I graduated with my bachelor's, I moved to Austin for a job.
Excellent. What did you study, and what's your degree in?
I got a degree in computer science.
Oh, excellent. What do you do for professionally?
I'm a programmer for the state of Texas.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Nice. So you like that? Is that, is it fun to use what you actually studied in school?
Oh yeah. I'm real glad that I got to use my real life learning and experience for sure. I know a lot of people don't get to do that. So
nice. So where would you say, you mentioned in the bio that you've always needed a competitive outlet. Where did that competitive drive come from? Did you play sports or other games with, your parents or siblings, or where do you think that developed?
I've always been a huge video game player as well. So I played a lot of competitive, like Call of Duty, mm-hmm. League of Legends, all those types of games as well.
Excellent. And so that's, and just kind of growing up, that was just kind of What happened?
Yeah, I was always a gamer, quote unquote, as you say, I guess. So I just always had to compete in whatever game I was playing at the time.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Now, prodigy out there, I forgot to mention, if you wanted to connect with Jeremy, you can do so on Twitter. He's at Ghost Sun Forever. That's where you can find him on Twitter. So reach out to him there. You can say, thanks for being on the show, ask a question. But that is where he is on socials. So, Jeremy, as far as Magic goes, we love hearing the origin story of our featured guests. And so we love to really dive into the details, and we want to be there with you and smell the cards. So can you take us back in time and tell us the story of the first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards?
Okay. It's quite a long time ago. I'm not actually sure the exact date, sometime before original Mirrodin. I was just a little kid back then, and my brother played some with his friends, and so I got my first exposure there. And basically I got a starter deck. I learned how to play, like reading the instructions out of the starter deck and such. Bought a few Magic packs here and there, but after a little while of playing back then, I left it alone for a long time, and then finally didn't get back into it until I was in high school.
Okay. So your first set that you ever remember was Mirrodin. Is that the time frame you said?
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. And starter deck, got the rule books and everything. That's really neat. And you played with your brother, you said?
I played a little bit with him. The main thing that came out of that is the starter deck had a little pad that you played on that told you the position of
your deck and things
like that. Yeah. So I still play in that exact configuration to this day. And apparently it's different from what a lot of people expect. So people... especially some of my friends are always ragging on me for the way I place my deck in graveyard and everything. But I'm it's the way I learned how to play, man.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And what would you say has been your favorite set?
My favorite set ever was probably Rise of the Eldrazi.
Ooh, why is that?
I don't play a lot of limited, but that was a set that was just the best limited set I've ever played. And I enjoyed drafting it so much. And it just had a lot of cards that I enjoy as well.
Excellent. And what is one of your favorite cards?
My favorite card of all time is actually Wolfbriar Elemental, which didn't come from Rise of Eldrazi, but the one right before it, World Wake.
Wolfbriar Elemental?
Mm-hmm.
What is that card? What does it do? Why do you like it? Tell us all about it.
It's green, green, two colorless, so four altogether, and it's a 4/4 with multi-kicker for a green, which means you can kick it as many times as you like, and for every time you kick it, it makes a 2/2 wolf.
Dang.
I just really liked the artwork. It was that was around the time I started playing Magic competitively. So just I'll always remember that artwork, and I've always loved it. And I started collecting it over the years. I've got multiple binders full of them now.
Really? I'm just doing a quick search here. Oh yeah, that's cool art. Yeah, I've seen that art. The Wolfbriar Elemental. The big elemental made out of wood or whatever, but the pack of wolves all around it. That's really neat. Yeah, that's a good one. Oh, fun stuff. Yeah, we love that. We love hearing, how you came in and some of your favorites, get to connect with you and learn a bit of you a little bit better. And so you said you started getting competitive around that time. Did you use Wolfbriar Elemental in any decks?
I've actually never played it in a competitive deck. It was just one of those cards that I was attached to on a sentimental level. But World Wake was the first pre-release I ever attended. So that was around the time I was getting back into it and getting serious.
So when you started getting serious about Magic, what was an early challenge that you faced or, a struggle that you eventually overcame?
I mean, I guess that's true for what's true for most people is the very beginning was acquiring the cards. I was just a high school student. I didn't really have much disposable income, so I had to trade, barter, prize packs, just anything I could to get the cards you needed for your deck. Back then, standard, you needed four Jace the Mind Sculptor for your deck, so that was quite a heavy task.
Dang. So just, like you said, trading and bartering, just kind of scrimping and scraping to get by, huh?
Yep, whatever you could. I remember I did some chores and drove this kid back and forth to school a few days in order to get a Jace the Mind Sculptor from him.
Dude, that's awesome. See, I love that, grit, whatever it took to make it happen. That's really cool.
Yeah, he was like, you do all this stuff for me, I'll give you this Jace. And I was like, I really wanted that, so for sure.
Dude, that's awesome. That's really cool. So how would you, that's it. You just get out there. I was going to say, what would you recommend to people today who face the same problem? But I mean, that's pretty much it. You just kind of get involved with the community, be willing to trade and make connections and just do what you have to.
Yeah, for sure. Magic is an expensive game to get into, but you if you're active in the community, you make connections, you have friends, you can find ways to borrow cards, earn cards in other ways, get good trades. I mean, trading is like actually a pretty valuable skill for growing your collection. You can turn very like what you could consider weak cards into strong cards pretty easily, actually.
Yeah. So we'll dive into your most recent accomplishments for sure, but kind of between then when you're getting serious about competitive and now, just highlight a few Magic milestones that you look back and say, oh, those were kind of big moments for me as you kind of move through Magic.
I started playing in various like Star City Games tournaments as they were starting up back then, and Grand Prix that were within easy driving distance. First memory that sticks out to me was the first time I made day two of a Grand Prix.
Ah.
Can't remember exactly which one it was, maybe like GP Houston around 2010 or 11, something like that. But yeah, it was after I'd finally managed to get all the cards I needed to build a top tier standard deck, and I was able to make day two of that tournament, which was a big milestone for me.
That's cool.
After that, it was traveling to various PPTQs, or I guess it was PTQs back then. I guess another milestone was there was a PTQ season that was extended. And so that was my first venture out of standard and getting into the more eternal formats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's neat when you kind of spread your wings and try a different format and end up doing well. You're like, oh, okay, good. I'm not a one-trick pony.
Exactly. Especially when you've been playing standard the whole time in your Magic career. When you start playing the older formats, you just get to take a step back and realize how many cards are out there. You like don't know what these cards do. They do crazy powerful stuff.
Nice. Oh, that's really fun. So on this journey that you've been on, which is full of ups and downs, just like every Magic player has their own journey that's full of ups and downs, we would love to hear about your worst Magic moment and specifically what you learned from that experience. So take us to the lowest of the lows, tell us what happened in detail, and then let's figure out what you learned.
Worst Magic moment. I don't really have one that sticks out in memory, but there have been several times where it's deep into a Grand Prix run. Actually, I do have one that sticks out to me. It was before GPs let you in at X and 3, so you had to be at least 7-2 to make day 2.
Right.
And I was at 6-2 going into the last round, so it was my winning in for day 2. And I recall making a critical mistake. I was playing the Summer Bloom Amulet of Vigor combo deck in Modern, and I had the opportunity to make one mana more than I did, and I made one less mana, and then cast a spell, and he spell pierced it.
Oh.
When if I had made the extra mana, I would be able to pay for it and win the game. So that was just a big moment for me where I needed to think about all the cards he could have in his hand. I was playing against Merfolk, and I was trying to resolve an Ugin, which would have just swept the board and instantly won the game. So I could have made 10 mana, and for some reason I made 9. And so just thinking about Spell Pierce as a possible card he could have had and making that extra mana would have made all the difference, but I didn't for whatever reason.
I was going to ask, what was the thought process, if any, behind your mana decision?
I recall it. In order to make that extra mana, I would have had to bounce an extra land back to my hand rather than having it in play. Mm. And so it was just the natural instinct of you want as many lands in play as possible normally, right? But it can actually be right that you want to bounce that land back to your hand just to play around that extra card, especially seeing as if the Ugin resolves, the game's pretty much over. It doesn't matter how many lands you have in play, really.
Good point. Good point. What was your takeaway then? So that experience, you know, trying to make day two and just barely miss it, you know, now being able to look back on it, what did you learn from that you could share with us?
I learned that even if, like, I did not think about Spell Pierce at that possible moment, but I realized that it's very important to know what cards you need to play around, what cards could be the one that could destroy you. You could essentially try to think of the worst card your opponent could possibly have against you in that moment, and try to think if you can possibly beat that card. And if there's a way you can play in order to beat that card, it's probably best that you do.
So that seems like, I'm on board. I'll play devil's advocate here, though. Like, that sounds really hard. I mean, because there's a lot of cards out there, like you said. And so, like, what if you, like, run through it all, be like, well, I can't think of anything that can screw me right now. And you run it out there like, oh, spell priest. I didn't think about that one. So how do you get past that? Does it just comes from playing a lot and just getting familiar with out there? Like, how do you build up the library of the worst thing that your opponent could do to you?
Oh, 100% it's just experience. Mm. I mean, now that I've had that happen to me, I've built that experience up. I'm going to be thinking about spell pierce next time, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is true that a lot of people don't like losing that way, but sometimes the only way to be able to think about more things is to experience them firsthand. So by making a mistake like that, I'll be thinking about that in the future in order to not make a mistake like that again, you know?
And those types of mistakes don't have to happen in, you know, a big arena like a Grand Prix or whatever. You can get out there and you can play with friends. You can do FNMs, like you can do local, you know, events and whatnot. You can just by getting out there, getting that experience, playing the formats, getting familiar with the different styles and decks and archetypes that are out there, and seeing, you know, getting blown out by cards you didn't know existed, and then putting that in your memory bank. Then when you go to these bigger events, you are more prepared. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you still get blown out by at big events or whatever. And other times, you know, your preparation has, you know, played into it, and you're able to navigate your way through and end up being cool like Jeremy.
Oh yeah, I agree. I'd add into that, like, a lot of people that consider themselves more professional, they don't like playing FNMs because they don't want to play against whatever brew that someone decides to play that week. But I find that actually be pretty valuable experiences because, like you were saying, that does give you a greater chance to get blown out by some card you were not expecting. I feel like those experiences playing against brews and such at FNM actually do help you a lot to expand your knowledge of the format and what things could possibly happen.
Cool. Yeah, I love that. I love, you know, getting that different perspective and learning and getting your take on it. And obviously the flip side are our highs, and we would love to hear your proudest Magic moment to date.
The one that sticks out to me the most happened back in 2014 when I top eighted my first Grand Prix. And that was because I was playing the last round, which was my winning into the top eight, and I mulliganed to four, and I managed to win that game. And so that's just was one of the best games I ever recall. It's one of the few times in a professional setting where I've managed to win on a mull to four, and it was like one of the most times I needed to, or time I needed to the most.
That's crazy. That's really cool. Mulling to four and still making it. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then recently you have had some good finishes. Is that right?
Yeah. In the past few weeks.
Tell us a little bit about those.
Sure. I managed to win with my team, GP Santa Clara, back at the beginning of January, where I was in the legacy seat playing Grixis Delver, which, like I was saying before, as you start exploring other formats from Standard, I eventually became hooked on the Eternal formats, mm-hmm. and that led to building a Legacy deck over time. So Legacy is a big favorite format of mine, so that's why I was playing that for my team, that GP, and we managed to make it all the way.
That's awesome. Congratulations. That's so cool that we're speaking with a champion right here, being able to, you know, make it all the way to the top of a GP. And obviously, in this particular case, not a solo effort, had some teammates there. So that's really, really cool. So first of all, congratulations. That's neat.
Oh, yeah. First, thank you very much.
What did that feel like, being able to, not top eight, like win a Grand Prix?
Oh, it felt great. Like, you're already so ecstatic just by making the top four. I forget, they cut the top four of that one because it's a team event.
Right.
But yeah, it's just super ecstatic because just from the top four, you already know you're going to the Pro Tour. Everything that you win past that just feels like a bonus, and winning the whole thing just feels like a dream. So just really, really glad that that was able to happen.
Wow, that's neat.
Especially from the start of that tournament, we started our first round of the tournament with a draw and then lost the third round. So we were not doing great at the start.
Wow.
But managed to win out from there mostly.
Oh, that's incredible. So how did you guys decide which decks to play and who played those decks?
We mostly just played what we were comfortable with, which also happened to be pretty solid decks for the format, luckily. Grixis Delver is a deck I've been playing pretty much since its inception in Legacy for many years. So I just stuck with what I was good with, basically. And then pretty much same with our modern teammate, Plate Dredge, which he's played for a very long time. And our standard player played Four Color Energy, which he's been playing some Energy Variant in Standard since Energy came out. So it was just decks we were all solid with, been playing a long time, and I guess the experience with them paid off.
And how did you like that three format event? Because that's pretty unique type of tournament.
Oh, it's one of my favorite types of events I've ever played. Yeah. I love all the team events I've played in.
Cool. Man, that's really neat. I think it's fun to... I was just very interested in that event. I think it's really neat that they had those three different formats and everyone gets to, you know, play. And so that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And it's still, you have to, you know, two or three of you have to win the round.
Yeah. So the great feeling about team events is even if you lose to a bad matchup or whatever, mm-hmm. you still have that hope in their mind that your teammates can carry you that round. So you're never completely hopeless.
Yeah. That's really neat. And so is this your first time going off to a pro tour then?
No, this will be my second pro tour since I was able to one from my previous top eight.
Yeah. And which pro tour did this line you up for?
This will be the 25th anniversary pro tour.
Wow.
Which I'm super psyched to play in. It's also going to be a team format.
Excellent. Have you guys talked about being the same team or are you going to mix it up and kind of get some pro tour experience on your teams or what do you think about that?
As far as we've decided right now, we're just going to run back the same team,
nice.
Keep what was working going.
Love it. Oh, that's great. That's totally great. How are you going to be preparing for this event? I always love chatting with people about that. Like, are you guys going to be, you know, practicing with other people who are qualified or what's that looking like?
We have a pretty good community here in Austin of, people. There's some other pro tour competitors from time to time, in the area. So yeah, we have a pretty good testing group. We also test on Magic Online. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just there's lots of solid players to test against. And we just set a date that we can all be out there and just make sure and get solid testing in.
Excellent. Now, you have played a lot of Magic in lots of different formats and arenas and against tons of different people all over the world. What would you say is the biggest mistake that you see players make?
Biggest mistake. I'd say the biggest mistake I see players make pretty constantly, that's also one of the easiest ones to correct, is tapping your mana correctly. Mm-hmm. As well as, I guess, the order you play your lands in. Even like watching like some of my teammates' matches like during these tournaments and such, like I see this mistake happen pretty constantly, even deep into the tournament. A red-black land and a red land, and they tap the red-black land to cast their red spell instead of leaving up the multicolored lands, just something like that.
Yeah. And how do you overcome that kind of weakness? What tips can you share with us?
Typically, it's slow down a little bit and pay a little closer attention. A lot of people are just like, I'm going to cast this spell, immediately tap the first lands they see and to cast it. Take a little time to survey your field, figure out what the best way to tap for that spell is, and you'll probably be a little more successful.
Excellent. And what aspects of Magic have you been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Just with my work doing a lot of programming, it helps seeing Magic as just kind of a logic puzzle a lot of the times. A problem that you're trying to figure out a solution to. I mean, that's what I do for most of my job. So it's pretty run some parallels there.
That's neat. Yeah. I love all the practical things that we, skills that we learn and hone from playing Magic. I think it's really neat. And,
oh, for sure.
You know, whether it's that skill or the social skills or whatever, you know, it's just so neat to hear what people, you know, take away. Have you noticed any growth in yourself as a, you know, as a player, as a person, through your experience of you know, being involved with Magic?
Yeah, I think it helped my confidence a lot. You know, I was more of a very socially awkward teenager back in the day. You know, so being a Magic player, you get to go to a lot of Magic events. Whether through your will or not, you're forced to interact with other people, mm-hmm. so you kind of have to develop those social skills. So I do actually think Magic helped me grow in my social life and social interactions. I mean, most of the friends that I've had for many years now, I've met through Magic originally, so it's also been a big help there.
That's awesome. Man, I love that. So neat. And as a Magic player, what are some of your shortcomings that you see? Like, what are you working on so you can become a better mage?
right now I'm currently working on making sure I see all the possible lines you can make at any time. Mm-hmm. I have a problem sometimes where I have this idea of what I want to do in my head and I just follow through on that, which like it may be the right idea, but it also may not. The problem is that I didn't take the time to think that all the way through. Yeah. So I think making sure you considered every possibility and making sure you select the best one is pretty important and something I'm working on.
And how do you approach that in the middle of the game? Because I find that when I have things that I want to work on, I tend to forget them when I start to play a game. And then afterwards, I'm like, oh, yeah, I wanted to focus on mulliganing or whatever it happens to be. So how do you keep your wits about you in a game so you can work on the things that you want to work on?
Yeah, it can be difficult sometimes for sure. My main thing I'm trying to do is to slow down. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody plays a little differently. And my inclination has always been that I play pretty fast typically. So just trying to make myself slow down, consider all the options, make sure I don't make any obvious mistakes because I didn't think about it. That's what I'm trying to do.
Love it. And at this point, what would you say is your best format, Jeremy?
My best format?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I actually consider Modern my best format right now. I've been playing it since its inception, and I think I own about 9 Modern decks right now, so I really love the format.
That's great. And what deck do you play, but you play 9. So what deck do you play the most, I guess, or are you most comfortable with, or what archetype or style?
Most recently, I've been playing the Kart Clan Ironworks combo deck. That's what I played at SCG Dallas.
Excellent. And just to get a little meta, I guess, so how does that deck attack, like win, and what's kind of the crux of it? And because I'm not familiar with it at all.
it's an artifact combo deck, most similar to the previous deck Eggs that was banned Modern a while back. So it's just a deck that uses artifact recursion and the primary artifact, Karkan Ironworks, that the deck's named after, allows you to sacrifice an artifact to make 2 mana. So you just chain sacrificing artifacts for mana, returning them from your graveyard to your hand to generate a ton of mana, draw a bunch of cards, and then usually you hard cast an Immercal.
Oh, there you go. That'll do it. So then how do you fight that strategy? You know, if you're sitting across the table from that deck, what are you looking to do?
The best thing your opponent can do is play Stony Silence, because then literally all your cards do nothing.
Dang. So that's it. Stony Silence for the win.
Yep, that's the number one card you can play against.
That is so crazy how Modern has all these amazing, like, wonderful different ways to play, and it's so open, and then then one card can shut down an entire deck. So
yeah,
crazy.
That's what defines Modern. There's a hate card for pretty much everything.
Yeah, man. What would you say, do you think that's the best deck in Modern right now, or?
Nah, I'm not going to try to fool anybody and say that. It's definitely more of a pet deck of mine, but I do think it's very strong.
That's cool. That's really cool. What are some of your other Modern decks that you enjoy to play?
I really enjoy Dredge. Mm-hmm. That's what me and my teammate who was on Modern play Dredge a lot. And my other kind of pet deck that I don't think is great, but I still enjoy to play is Skred Red.
Oh, you know what? Somebody played that against me a while back, and that was very interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's really fun playing a mono-red deck that is a control deck.
Yeah, that's cool. Sweet. So in this season right now, how many pro points do you have?
I'm currently at 9.
Ooh.
But just by going to the Pro Tour, you get 3 by default. So that'll be up to 12 eventually when that happens.
That's not bad. So basically you have bronze for the season, which gets you out of PPTQs. That's nice, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to that for sure because I've not had the best of luck at those.
Get to go straight to the RPTQs. That's cool. Neat. And, I mean, do you have any other events lined up other than the Pro Tour to maybe pick up some more pro points this season?
I've been trying to get it to as many GPs as possible since this opportunity has kind of been laid out before me. Yeah. But planning to play GP Memphis this next month and then potentially Phoenix the next and Seattle the one after that.
Not bad. Not bad at all. Now, obviously, you have experience going to, you know, big tournaments, stuff like that. What tournament day tips do you have for us? Because, you know, they're long days, especially day one, and you know, maybe some players aren't used to it or whatever. What do you do to stay focused and maintain, you know, energy and stamina throughout a long tournament day?
I didn't used to do this, and so I know when I started doing it, I had a noticeable difference, and that's just eating a good breakfast, making sure you get enough sleep the night before, and packing snacks for the day. Mm-hmm. A lot of times during long GP days, there's not a good break or opportunity for you to eat lunch, so making sure you have something while you're hungry is one of the best things. It keeps your mind focused, keeps you in the game.
What are some of the snacks you like to take?
My favorite thing to take is trail mix, but I wouldn't fault anybody for some beef jerky or something like that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Trail mix, jerky. Yeah, something that has some of the slow-burning proteins and stuff like that.
Yeah, just the stuff that give you lots of energy throughout the day and make sure you have tons of water.
Yeah, tons of water for sure. And do you do anything on a daily – do you have any habits or regular rituals or whatever, whether magic-related or not, that you feel helps contribute to your success as a player?
I mean, a lot of people dislike this, and I know it doesn't do anything, but I always pile shuffle between every game.
Yeah, there you go.
I use the max amount of opportunities they give you.
Which is?
Once per game.
You can do it once per game, right? Okay, cool. And then you have to riffle it up again. So
yeah, I do plenty of riffles afterwards, but it's just kind of my habit to do that pile shuffle before every game.
I think it's a good way to spread out, not spread out, but to just kind of break up the clumps or whatever. So I wouldn't
break up everything from the previous game, and it also lets you count your deck to make sure nothing's missing,
which is, I think, very important to make sure you don't present an illegal deck. And also doing that for your opponent to make sure they're not presenting an illegal deck is a tip that we've heard here on the show before too. So that's cool too. So thinking back to kind of rewinding a bit, but thinking back to when you were up and coming and back when you're getting serious, not when you're brand spanking new. What advice could you give to a new competitive player that could maybe shortcut their learning curve? Something that you wish you knew then, let's put it that way, that would be helpful to somebody else in a similar situation.
Well, I guess my first thing would be to realize that Magic is a game of variance. So don't let one crazy result kind of taint everything else you have going on. You'll have super unlucky moments and such, and you can't let those get you down or make you give up on something necessarily. So a lot of it's realizing the variance. Even if you're the best player in the room, that doesn't mean you're necessarily going to win. It takes a lot of grinding to win big tournaments. I've gone to many GPs before I won one,
Good stuff. Man, that all around good advice. And I want to remind the Prodigies again, if you want to connect with Jeremy, you can find him on Twitter. He's at GhostSunForever. So look him up there for sure. And man, this has been a blast kind of going through your history, where you came from, where you're going, and your ups and downs along the way. And Jeremy, do you have a parting piece of guidance for us? Either something that you've said before you want to emphasize, or something new you want to share with us here at the end?
Yeah, I guess my best piece of advice is don't give up. I mean, it took me 8 years of solid playing to get to where I am now, and you're not necessarily going to get it your first year of playing, but if you are serious about competing and you love the game, then just keep going and you'll get there eventually.
Love it. Jeremy, thank you so much. I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse, and thank you so much for your time, for sharing your stories and your experiences with us. You're a hero among Planeswalkers. It's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be meta screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you very much.
And there you have it, Jeremy Fry, Grand Prix champion, coming to you in episode 270 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. Jeremy, thank you so much for being a guest here on the show. Prodigies, I hope that you got as much out of that as I did, and boy, what a story. I just love hearing his journey, how he did what he did, and that's great. Of course, if you want the show notes, you can go to mtgpro2.com/Jeremy Fry to look that up. There is a synopsis of what we talked about, as well as links to any resources that may have been mentioned. And before we wrap things up, I want to say thank you again to Paragon City Games for their support of the show, and encourage you to go check out ParagonCityGames.com, where you can see what they have going on. Especially if you are local to Utah, I highly recommend you check out their store. Likewise, patrons, thank you for your support. Because of you, we're able to keep this going. I'm going to continue to encourage current patrons to go and update your support level in Patreon, because when the switch happened, it kind of messed things up. And if you're considering to be a brand new patron, then by all means, go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon, where you can choose to pledge any amount you want. And if you are at the $5 or more level per month, then you will be considered for our drawings moving forward. And I want to congratulate Jason Myers again for winning the drawing for December. And stay tuned because we will soon be announcing the winner for the January drawing. And right now, the pool of people who can win is very, very small. So hop in there now and you have a high chance of winning. So thanks so much for joining me today. Can't wait to connect with you again next week. Until then, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.